guys, welcome to Breaking the Stigma. I'm Successful. This is my co-host, O'Neal.
This is the Culture Therapy, guys.
So this is going to be a very interesting topic. We're talking about sports and mental health.
Yes, and we got two of our guests here. Can you guys just explain to you guys, you know, how it pertains to you?
Okay, my name is Brandon. I'm actually a strength and conditioning coach. I've been doing that now for 6 years.
My name is Trey Wan. I'm the chair of the Sport and Mental Health Committee here at MPN and also student athlete advocate.
Awesome, awesome, awesome. So, guys, I just want you guys to really discuss from your guys' experience of being in sports, you know, how it pertains to mental health. You know, where does it come in where, you know, with when, you know, young girls and boys, you know, they're playing, you know, from K to 12 and then on, you know, through college and maybe even to the professional level. You know, where does mental health affect their ways of playing sports and how it affects their personal life?
I would say I think mental health, it starts from the jump. Mm-hmm. As far as, you know, from a male perspective, from personally speaking, I knew sports as a way, you know, not really knowing at the time, of teaching myself how to be a man.
Right.
I was born in, you know, single parent home, and, you know, there were some things that my mother couldn't, or she felt she couldn't necessarily teach me about being tough or being strong, because, you know, some of the other kids might pick on you. So she, you know, threw me in sports. I remember very clearly, I was playing sports at 4 years old. Like, lied, didn't even put in a birth certificate, nothing. Like, I just had a lot of energy. I was a bigger kid. So she got me in. And sort of was just on a conversation of, you know, you always show toughness. You don't cry. You learn these things at such a young age. And I think what was very interesting for me was that on the side of me, I had a cousin by the name of Shay Shay, and she played with me. She played football with me up until 11. So I came from a background where I would hear, you know, naysayers and little things, you know, about how a girl can't play football, or you throw like a girl, or you punch like a girl. But my cousin Shay Shay is out here one of the best. Like, she's one of the best running backs, you know, on the B team and everything. You know, there was one year they made the playoffs as the B team, and we didn't make the playoffs as the A team.
Word.
You know, so.
Shout out to Shay Shay.
Yeah, shout out to Shay Shay. So right. I grew up in a background, you know, where I saw it for me personally as it was to teach me how to be tough. But also on the other side, for my cousin, like, everyone was doubting her, you know, and it made me very a protector, but it also helped me grow up and say, you know, true, women belong in this space just like men.
Of course.
I don't really see the difference, but I also got exposed to a whole landscape that didn't think that, mm-hmm. didn't believe mm-hmm. that, and I saw that growing up.
Right.
I do have to agree with you. Growing up, I played sports early as well, yeah. And just like yourself, I learned to be a man. I learned to work as a team. I learned to be productive. I learned to find something that drives me. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. I learned to go to an escape. A lot of times, I think in life, we don't have an escape. Mm-hmm. It's outside of the things that we do just naturally, just from work to relationship to home. It's like we don't have that escape. But I've learned, like, growing up that, you know, I can find something that I'm passionate about and something that drives me and pushes me to want to do better or be better. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Well, let me ask you this. For both of you, was it your decision to play sports, or did your parents instill this in you to play sports? Because a lot of kids are, you know, told, like, you're going to be a football player, you're going to be a basketball player, you're going to get us out the hood, or, you know, right, whatever, right. You're going to make us famous and rich.
I think for me personally, it wasn't a choice. It absolutely wasn't a choice. Like I said, my mother used it as a tool to keep me energized, to just keep me busy, you know, and really at the times that she couldn't be there, there was somebody there, you mm-hmm. know, a coach, my grandfather, somebody was there, and I played sports year round. Mm. So I never knew, I quite honestly never knew anything outside of sports, you know?
Could you say that it was almost a substitute for structure?
Yeah, most definitely. Mm-hmm. It was definitely a substitute mm-hmm. for structure. Mm-hmm. I will say what was very interesting about it was that the first thing that I discovered outside of sports was chess. And I remember being in a chess tournament.
Man, I like chess too, man. Yeah, that's what's up, man. Yeah. Don't sleep on chess players. Exactly. You know what I mean? Yeah.
It changes up your whole mindset right. and your landscape. But I remember winning a chess tournament and being happy about it. And I remember telling my friends on the football team about it. And I remember getting jumped in the bathroom because they was like, you're a nerd.
Yeah,
and after that, I took myself away from chess. Like, this is second grade that I'm feeling this way. And my mom was like, why don't you play chess? And I remember she went to Marshall. She bought me this whole chess board, everything. And I totally disassociated myself with it because I was afraid of how other people thought. Yep. And at that time, it was just like, I want to be cool. I want to fit in. Mm. If people saying this is a nerd sport, or not even a sport, it's just being a nerd.
Right.
No, I'm good.
Yeah, I feel like it's, you know, it's being put into a box, being forced almost into that box of masculinity.
Yeah.
You know, and I feel, you know, like, you know, there's some sports that are quote unquote less manly than others. You know, it's I'll be honest, and you can think what you want or whatever, but like, I've seen male gymnastics players. Mm-hmm. Or gymnastics. I don't know if they're players or whatever, but gymnastic gymnasts. You can tell I don't really watch the sport that much. You know what I mean? But at the same time, I remember watching the Olympics and, you know, seeing these guys like those they're doing some incredible stuff, man. But like, just because they wear elite, and I remember being in high school, you know, we make fun of the male cheerleaders or whatever. But you know, they are able to flip people and they're strong, upper body strength and everything like that. Probably can bench more than some of the football players. Right. But you know, I feel like some of that box of that masculinity is, I don't want to say it's toxic, but it's disallowing a lot of some of our young boys to be able to express their athleticism in different ways.
Absolutely. You know, in high school, I was actually on a swim team.
Mm. Word.
And they used to say, he'd be, oh, he on a swim team, he's gay. And I'm like, I get to look at that naked girls. Like, yeah,
right.
But that's what I was going to say, too. What does that say about the guys like you on the swim team, the cheerleaders, the gymnasts, like about your mental capacity? Because it's like, you're hearing all this from your peers, but you're still like, okay, I don't care what you guys
do. Well, I think it's more to each his own. I think to some people, they have that competitive drive where they can be their own person. You know what I mean? I never was the type of person, I wasn't brought up to worry about with somebody. Don't get me wrong, when I was young, to some degree, you're going to be influenced. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? But it was something I found passion in, and I was able to do it. I went to a predominantly black school. You know what I mean? So that's, so you have to have balls to say, you know what, I'm on the swim team. Yeah. You know what I mean? And really, didn't nobody know I was on the swim team until they wrote about me in the paper, and they actually put me in a school paper, because I was actually one of the only black African-American males to make it to regionals in an individual event. So they had a picture of me with my shirt off, you know what I mean? And I did a couple push-ups, you know what I mean?
Yeah, so everybody
was like, oh my God, this video on the swim team. And people, like, they was accepting. Yeah. Like, the whole Chilean team came to watch me swim, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So that was,
because it's cool to win. I don't care who you are. Oh, yeah. It's cool to win, eh?
I think what's interesting about both of y'all, about both of your comments, you being on the swim team, and then also you talking about male gymnasts, it just popped in my head. But how these are things that we did as a kid. I mean, honestly, what's the difference? What are some of the biggest differences between being a male gymnast and being in a leotard versus being in a ring in a leotard wrestling? Right. Like, the only another thing that is, you know, in wrestling, you know, what's the difference? Yeah. You know, you're still doing some of the same acrobatical things. Sorry if I mispronounced that word. Yeah. It sounded good.
We knew what you meant.
What's the difference? Kids, I remember playing Marco Polo, but I couldn't get to the 6 feet because I couldn't swim. Right. So I'm doggy paddling over
there. I remember doing flips. I used to love doing flips when I was a kid, rolling around and doing flips. Like, I probably should have been a gymnast. You know what I mean?
They may associate it with the less physical contact, the less manly it is. You know what I mean?
I see what you're saying.
Same thing about golf. Same thing about baseball. Baseball make more money than anybody. It's one of the most safest sports that you can play. You know what I mean? But they say, oh, you play baseball. I play baseball as well. You know what I mean? Yeah. They make more money. They take that. You get less injuries. You know what I mean?
It's far more secure than football. I'll tell you that much.
Yeah.
More accessibility. Yeah.
Well, I want to ask you guys this question because, you know, a lot of athletes, let's say, you know, when they lose a game or they're not the MVP or things like that, like, how did you guys, like, handle those types of situations?
Like failures? Just essentially like failures?
Yeah.
Not good. I'll be honest. I'm sure y'all were the same way, extremely competitive.
Yeah.
I took it, like, to heart a lot of times, specifically when I was younger. I would physically... I feel it physically a lot of times that, like, you know, losing a game or losing a race when I was running track. You know, I feel like, you know, if I could go back, I would tell my younger self, just, you know, there will be another race. There'll be another game. There'll be another play. And a lot of times, sometimes we might not get that from either your parents, or you might not get that even from your coach. Your coach might just say, suck it up and da-da-da, whatever.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So, me personally, I know you guys have a different perspective, but I didn't take failure very well, and I wish I did as a child.
See, me, I was driven. I was very driven. And I didn't take failure in a sense. I took it for what it was. Mm-hmm. Me failing was saying, okay, you're not working hard enough. Anybody can tell you, even when I played baseball, when I worked out, I was trying to be the best, period. It was no ands, ifs, or buts. So when I lost, I was like, okay, I lost. I did everything I could have did, but that means I need to get back to the drawing board. You know what I mean? I feel like if I'm going to commit myself to something, I'm going to commit. And I've been, that's how competitive I was. I didn't care. You know what I mean? I've dang near passed out trying to outdo everybody. You know what I mean? So when it's game time, I can assure you can count on me. You know, even growing up, it was times, you know, you get, sometimes you just get emotional. You know, you just give everything you can, and then sometimes they're just better than you, and you can't accept the fact that they're better than you. And just like you said, suck it up and keep pushing. Mm-hmm. But it's like, no, I can't suck it up. It's somebody that's better than me, and a man that you is like,
I want that.
He ain't better than me. Like, yeah, I'm running back.
exactly. Yeah.
Yeah, I think for me personally, it was honestly, it was completely opposite. Mm-hmm. I think for me, it was just like, I was just this kid in my own zone. I was in my own world, and when I look back at it, I competed at a young age in a lot of top moments. You know, every summer I was in the Junior Olympics for individual sports and track and field, for football. You know, going into my senior year, I had over 20 scholarships, and I didn't take it seriously. I think the first time that I actually took something seriously and I gave it my full effort was my junior year, and we lost the game. I remember that was the first time after that game when we lost, I was like, man, I'll never try hard again. And I remember saying that. I remember saying that in the, like, in the locker room.
This man was defeated. It's like, man,
I was like, I looked at everybody and I was like, bro, I promise you, I will never try hard again if this is the result.
That's the opposite of what Tim Tebow said.
You know what I mean? I'm gonna dedicate the rest of my life. It was like, bro, mentally, I was hurt that I finally was vulnerable enough to give it my all,
right,
and this was the payback in return. Y'all been talking to me about giving my all, 110%, be committed, buy in,
right,
and I finally tried this way, and it didn't work for me.
Well, see, and that's why I started the Sports and Mental Health Committee for MPN, because this is exactly what athletes, you know, go through, you know, and developing healthy coping skills and styles, that's absolutely so essential.
Yeah.
You know, people don't really think about what they do, what athletes go through trying to win a game. People just look at the entertainment. You know, absolutely, they're entertained, you know, and they see, like, let's say the professionals with the flashy clothes and the jewelry and stuff, but you don't know, like, what they're actually going through being in such a competitive sport.
No one sees the process, and I'll tell you this, personally, as a collegiate student athlete and working with student athletes, when you get to that high school, junior and senior, you start getting recruited, things start getting more real. And then when you get into college, Division I, Division II, a lot of schools, especially when you're playing in sports that promote and demand a lot of higher revenue, football and basketball, what you notice is your schedule is already predetermined for you.
Yeah.
From 6 a.m. to 8 p.m., you already have your schedule listed out for you. So when we talk about student athletes and we talk about mental health and we talk about time management, performance management, realistically, time management, what time management skills are you truly building if your schedule's already been predetermined? And you only have 4 hours of quote-unquote freedom to make decisions on what you want to do. Socially, do you want to go back into your playbook or practice? Or do you want to go to sleep? Now, I don't know which one of y'all was choosing, but it was tossed in the air for me every night. Like, it was just a juggle. But we talk about that, and then we talk about performance management to where, you know, back home, everyone's relying on you. You're trying to keep your spot.
Right.
You're
mentally
like, I need to do better because I don't want Buddy behind me to take my spot.
Right.
And then you're looking into a game that's about wins and losses and a coach that is about, what have you done for me lately? And lately doesn't mean 2 months. Lately means like, what have you done for me this week?
Right.
You could have had 17 tackles last game. You could have had 12 points, 15 rebounds, and just laid buckets all day. But today, like, what are you going to do for me? Because I'll snatch you if you're not doing what you need to do. So all of those things going into your mental every single day, because it's not like your sport, once it's off season, it's just off season. You're just lollygagging and playing around.
Right.
We're not even talking about academics yet.
Yeah, that's a whole another beast.
That's a whole other concept of the world. I remember, you know, playing in a sport that highly demanded a lot of your attention. I used to screen calls and not even want to call or talk to my parents or talk to my mom or my grandparents or anything, because the first thing that will come out their mouth is house football. Are you going to start this year? What you looking like on the depth chart? All these different things. And I'm like, that's the last thing I'm going to talk about. Like, I remember losing my phone and I didn't get it replaced for 2 months because it was the most just fulfilling. I felt free. I didn't have to answer to no one. And then eventually my mom got in contact with me through my coach.
It's like, where have you been?
Yeah, that was a whole different story.
Right.
But all of that impact that I'm sure you guys also had to share as well, you know, even as a swimmer, you mentioned a great point of people didn't even know you was a swimmer until you was on the front page. And either people were accepting or people was like, well, black swimmer, and what are you doing? And I'm sure you heard a couple comments in the pool from other people that you competed against.
Absolutely.
And you had to hold your tongue. And it's real. Yeah. It's real, and people don't talk about it because, like you said, the process.
Right. You know, I want to just a real, just like, you know, tell a lot of the athletes that, you know, want to go to the next step after high school. Something that I'm sure y'all know as well, you know, it becomes more business-like. You know, it's I know a lot of my friends that went to college that dropped out, like myself. I dropped football because it was no longer just about the fun, about playing the game.
Right.
And it weeds out the ones who understand that this is my livelihood. This is what I want to do with my life. And those who play the sport because maybe they like the sport and they like the camaraderie, yada yada yada, whatever it is, the other variables to it. But it gets weeded out, and that was the biggest thing, like you said. I mean, yeah, I was in the morning. I mean, I'm there at 6. You go to workout. You go look at film. You might have practice, and then you go to your classes, and then from class you go to a whole workout, and then you go home. It's only about 4 hours that you can do whatever.
Yeah.
And more than likely, when we're talking about academics, you got to do your homework.
Yeah.
But then too, like, they're also like athletes are trained like to, okay, this is what you're gonna do. You're gonna be best at this sport, and then they don't think, well, what's after it?
Yes, like, that's actually huge.
After the game?
You get hurt, and now you can't play that sport that you dedicated your 100% of your life to. How does that affect you?
So it's an identity piece, like we talked about. You know, sports, social, and then who you actually are. Within an identity, when you break those three down, if you think about sports like football and basketball, when are those sports coming into college? When does that player step on campus? And what are the first things that they're getting used to? You know, for football and basketball, they're in training over the summer for 2-3 months and probably taking about one or two classes, classes, transitional classes, easy A, get that B. And then you're going to tell this person, okay, well, we're going to go up and we're going to start season now. And I'm going to put you in 15 credit hours. So how do you tell somebody that who's really dismissed the academics part, the people that really dismiss their social life because they're trying to get transitioned into this new system as an athlete, all those other identities, you know, they decrease or they're non-existent. So when you do get that injury or when you do, you run out of eligibility, you know, it's identity foreclosure. You know, now you got to focus on something else and you feel like you've been robbed. I mean, I put down some names, but we've had Maurice Claret from Ohio State, who went from a promising running back to who got injured and robbed a bank in Ohio and went to jail. And now he's trying to put his life back on track. We have Ohio State basketball player DJ Carlton, who just left his team and spoke up about his mental health. Marcus Howard from Marquette talks about how he actively has been using therapy since he was in high school. And he's like telling players, and these are not, you know, second string, fourth string guys. This is Big East, you know, guys projected to go to the NBA. Imani McGee Stafford for the Dallas Wings, when she was at UT Austin, she talked a lot, constantly about her struggles with mental health and a lot of the struggles that she went through. And lastly, you know, New Orleans Saints, CJ Gardner-Johnson. He just opened up. He's been in the league for 2 years. He just talked about over Twitter about how for these last 2 years, he's been in one of the biggest struggles in his life with his mental health and telling people, you know, take care of yourself. You just have Marshawn Lynch that, you know, take care of your mental, take care of your chicken. Like, he's telling these young dudes, this is something that...
This is the beast.
This is somebody that's well-decorated and everyone sees as indestructible. But, you know, when it comes to identity and what's going to come after, I mean, I think as of now, especially with media, we've seen way too often, and probably from our personal relationships with student-athletes or friends, we see it way too often where it used to be to us like, oh man, they tripping. Like, I don't know what's going on with Buddy, but he needed to get it together.
Yeah.
And then 3 years later, you seeing them again and you just like, yo, something's really going on with bro. Yeah. Something's really going on with sis. Like, how can I approach that? How can I truly help if I don't know what's going on?
Right.
But the signs was there clearly in the jump. You know, I think.
So I would ask then, you know, what would you tell young athletes today in terms of protecting and safeguarding their mental health with as they go through the journey of becoming their hopes and dreams of being a professional athlete?
I think we would have to speak with them, but we'd also have to speak with who's pushing them, who's driving them.
That's true.
Parents,
that's true.
When they come with the coaches.
Quote that.
Like, a lot of, I do strength conditioning for young boys' basketball teams as well. And I tell the coaches at the same time, you can talk to them crazy, you can do all this stuff, but you have to still prepare them mentally. You don't want them to be, you don't want to program to think that only way they can get results is if you yell at them, cuss at them, you know, you push them or be physical with them. Because it takes a toll on them. You know what I mean? Sometimes you can be so committed to something that can be the only thing you have. And if I crush that in you, I just crush who you are, your being. But then you didn't have nobody. So you didn't have an advocate to say, hey, it's okay. It's going to be all right. You got another game. Don't worry about it.
Yeah.
Okay, you didn't run this lap. We'll run that lap tomorrow. Yeah. You know what I mean? To be more motivating than, you know what I mean, than physical.
Yeah. And I think I'm going to piggyback on that. I think the most important part is, you know, who's leading our young men and women today.
Yeah.
I came from, you know, I graduated undergrad in 2014. I coached college football. And the number one thing that used to grind my gears was when I would hear coaches that was in the game for 30, 40 plus years say, well, it's just old school coaching. If they can't handle it, they can go and transfer.
Yeah.
Well, old school coaching, according to these guys, is, you know, 1970s, 1960s.
Right.
Put that in a historical context.
What it
might look like overall. So, you know, back in the day, you know, you had people going to the NFL convention like Dr. Harry Edwards speaking about how, you know, NFL players at that time, black NFL players, were being looked at as cattle. They were calling it the new slave plantation. So if you want to call it old school coaching and you want to keep that mindset, well, it's 2020. And a lot of these cats, you can't say much to them without, you know, hearing something or clap back.
Right.
And you can't sit there and say, well, they're not coachable. So I think it really needs to start with educating coaches and counselors and advisors about mental health.
Mm-hmm.
I will personally say, I used to go to my strength coach all the time. I don't know what it was about my strength coach. Maybe it was the enthusiasm, the energy that they had, or maybe because they weren't personally my position coach.
Right.
But that was really the only person I felt comfortable talking to. And I had about 3 different strength coaches over my 5-year career in college.
Mm-hmm.
But never talked to a position coach.
Yeah.
Never went into the head coach's room.
No. Never.
Never. Right.
I'm not doing it.
Yeah. You don't want to seem weak.
Yeah,
it's simply what it is. You don't want to seem weak. And the thing is, we can tell you, okay, so you want to take time for yourself. We can say you know, go out and enjoy yourself. Give yourself some me time. You can coach that and you can tell the players, you know, to do that. But if they're not being programmed to do that, making it important for them, they don't know to do it. Kind of like my fighters. I tell my fighters all the time, a lot of fighters, they try to make weight. And the way they make weight is they try to sweat it out. But the thing is, when you're not healthy and you're sweating this out, you start losing the fluids from your brain. Mm-hmm. You just don't get that back when you hydrate. You know what I mean? That's why they have so many health issues after the fact, or even people dying in the ring. You know what I mean?
Right.
So it's important to stay on top of it. And again, like you just said, everybody around you that's surrounding you being advocates. Because watch this. In our community, if we push everybody into sports, but we don't have nothing second, what's going to happen when they fall off?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
What's going to happen whenever they graduate and it's like, okay, what can I do now? They don't have an identity anymore. They were told what to do.
Yeah.
A whole lot of neighborhood sport legends.
Yeah.
There's a lot.
right.
There's a lot. Yeah. That's the biggest, I think, is specific with just, you know, I watch football and I played football and things like that. That's the one thing I really hated is it's, you know, when those players were done with the game, they gave it their all, they gave us everything. And then all of a sudden we hear on the news that they committed suicide.
Yeah.
And we're like, oh, you know, oh, what happened? Blah, blah, blah. Well, I wish we could have prevented it. I'm like, you could have.
Right. Well, I want to say,
go ahead.
As the chair of the Sports and Mental Health Committee, where do you foresee you leading the committee in the talk about sports and mental health?
Clarify your question for me, please.
Like, what changes? I know we're doing where you guys are going to the different universities mm-hmm. and speaking to the athletes. Mm-hmm. You know, like, what exactly are you guys going to try to push, like Brandon was saying? You know, you got to make sure that you're instilling them and training them.
Yeah. This.
So what exactly would you?
I think the purpose of the Sport and Mental Health Committee is really not only talking to the athlete from a relatable background of, hey, I did it. I know what it feels like, and I know mm-hmm. what I'm going through, mm-hmm. and trying to be that bridge builder of saying, hey, don't go down this path, like giving them the resources, but also being very intentional with having parents and having administrators right. and yeah. coaches in the room, because even down to the youth leagues, you know, parents already assume, well, you know, my baby is with their coach. Mm. I don't want to step on no toes. Mm-hmm. I don't want to do anything.
Yeah,
like, I think that's the biggest part, is that the coaches and the parents got to be more educated than the players.
Oh, yeah. Because they have to be.
I've been in plenty of rooms as a player and as a advocate that I probably said something exactly word verbatim than a coach or a parent, but all of a sudden in that kid's head, the light clicks on. And I'm like, man, that's deep. And it's like, you heard this from mom.
You're just not listening.
So I think that, you know, all three angles sort of have to become a team, a community, and we have to, across the line, be able to educate, say these same things so that they hear it from so many different voices, because eventually one of us is going to be able to connect with them.
Right.
If it ain't me, hopefully it's you. If it ain't you, hopefully it's the parent. If it ain't the parent, hopefully it's the coach.
Right.
Somebody has to connect. And if you don't make that connection, we have the examples there. If they fail, let's still be able to, you know, work together to be able to lift them up, because they will it's just experience. So I think that's the route that the committee is really trying to go towards.
I think this was a great conversation, and I'm glad that all of you got to share your experience.
Of course.
And we definitely didn't leave out the female athletes.
Right.
Shout out Shay.
Yeah, definitely Shay. Yes, sir.